We're going to talk to you.
You are the initiate. You are the cosmic being.
I found out that I was actually getting a 2-inch by 2-inch brand through the cauterizing hand.
We no longer under the laws of Moses.
The realm of the kingdom comes with violence, and the violence shall take it by force.
Coffee.
And cults.
Hi, John.
Hi, Sam.
Hi, listeners.
And welcome to Coffee and Cults, where once a month we meet, drink coffee or gin, and talk cults, sects, and fringe religious movements from around the world.
Please be aware this podcast may not be suitable for all listeners, as it will contain strong language, and we've got just lots of crime. Lots and lots of crime. Think of a crime, we've got that crime.
Yeah, content warning, I guess, for bad shit going down.
Yeah, lots of bad shit. We'll start with a very quick catch-up of where we've been and what we've been up to. First of all, apologies for the radio silence. John had some very large life things go on.
So much life stuff has happened, Sam.
It's been a busy 2024 so far.
It's been a busy 2024. It's been a 2024 of some big changes. And yet few changes,
yeah.
And some craziness, and lots of things. I don't even know where to start on the run of things. There's been some big, like, careery, worky changes that we don't need to go into now, really. There was a lot of housing instability, worry,
yeah.
Fear,
yeah.
Near... not actual homelessness, but...
Well, it could have
been, maybe.
If everything had gone badly. Which
is now resolved very comfortably, except for the thought of my finances. Please do, if you'd like to support us, you can do that on patreon.com/coffeeandcults
or John,
donate on
low.
A one-off basis to ko-fi.com/coffeeandcults. Both Sam and I have mortgages now and not very much money. So please do consider donating. And then all of that was thrown into further chaos.
Oh my gosh.
By the fact that some weeks ago now, we were evacuated from our house because of a World War II bomb that had been discovered nearby.
An unexploded one.
Possibly on the edge of exploding.
Yeah.
That had been dug up and hit by a spade. And then just left for a week.
Just a couple of days. Just, we'll move it later.
Let's wait 7 days before we tell the police we think we might have a bomb in our back garden.
Yeah. And the original plan was for them to detonate that bomb in place. And then just two guys the morning of were like, I think we can move it. And so moved it. And so luckily, John's home still has windows.
Yeah. We didn't actually get bombed. But we were, not in our house for 4 or 5 days. Without knowing whether we'd be able to go back or what was going to happen. We had to stage a late night raid on the first evacuation night to get the dog, because they wouldn't let us go to rescue the dog who was locked in the house.
Dog is safe.
But they did eventually let us go and get the dog. So I've been telling people, Sam, that I am very happy to have survived the Plymouth Blitz, and that, you know, whenever anyone talks about Blitz spirit,
you've got it.
It's
now.
This.
Yeah.
Look, you can look at it, Sam. It's right here across the table from you. This is what it looks like. The Greatest Generation.
Beautiful. Yeah. Does that mean you're, oh no, you can't, you're not a boomer now. No, you're Greatest Generation now. Does that mean everything moves along?
I don't know quite how that works out for my placement, but.
But then, like, all the homes around being discovered that their home insurance wouldn't cover this because it was an act of war. And then there was, apparently, I've got another friend that lives down the road a little bit, and one of her neighbours was talking about getting someone to come and arson their home so that the home insurance would cover the arson because the bomb wouldn't have covered it. Silliness.
It was the craziest week of my life recently. It was pretty wild. So for that reason and lots of other reasons, we just haven't been able to get together and pod.
But thank you all so much for your messages while we've been away. Thank you for your understanding and thank you for being here right now.
We love you.
We love you. That's not the end.
So we're going to hit back into a new series that Sam's going to kick off.
Woo.
To also sort of repay your patience. We're going to pop an episode that was a Patreon exclusive up on the feed as well. So you'll get the number of episodes you would have got just a little bit kind of wiggled around.
Differently aligned than maybe previous desired.
But we're back, baby.
We're back. And what voice was that? I don't know what it was. I was
It's sort of like, it's sort of like the gangster voice, but it's the 1920s gangster voice, but more kind of like a frog.
A 1920s gangster frog. I was looking for a new tattoo.
That would actually be a great tattoo.
Yeah? You draw it for me. I won't get it, but you draw it for me anyway.
Not if you're not going to get it, no.
Okay, fine.
If there are any artists listening that would like to draw that for Sam so that she can have it tattooed, that would be somewhere in the middle range of weirdness of your tattoos, Sam, so I think you should go for it.
Yeah, I suppose. Well, my tattoos aren't that weird. I'm going to get a new one, though. I'm going to get one with my cat's name on it.
Aww.
My cat's name is Coleslaw.
What about the other one?
I want to get something for her as well. This is a conversation we can have later.
Okay. So, distraction aside, we are back.
We're back,
folks,
baby.
Looking at cults and fringe groups. And, oh boy, we're doing one that I have wanted us to do for so long.
This
it's a big hitter.
This was the first one on my list when we started.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, listeners, as promised, we are finally talking about Aum Shinrikyo, also known as Aum Supreme Truth. I'm just going to continue to call it Aum.
Great.
So it was founded in 1987 by, wait, I'm going to say his name in the like Western order of names, not the Japanese order of names.
Okay.
Chizuo Masumoto, who then later on changed his name to Shoko Asahara. So you may have heard Shoko Asahara, you may have heard both names.
Yeah.
But Asahara is the one that's more commonly kind of referred to as the leader of this group. You've probably heard of them before in relation to the Tokyo Sarin subway attack, and or just me promising to do this episode for the last 3 years.
Can you remind me what year that was?
Yeah,
Sam.
1995.
Because, you know, we've had the conversation before about what cult first came into our brains or interested us, and I think we, you know, I've always said kind of Waco-y, Jonestown-y.
Wait, is it go back?
It's all right, you can correct yourself.
Oh, 1995.
I, as you were saying it then, suddenly had a really vivid memory of watching it on the news in 1995.
Goodness.
So I would have been like 10.
Wow.
But I can see that in my head right now. So maybe that is part of my journey to this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Holly and Jessica were where I got interested in true crime.
Yes.
Yeah. I thought that was the kind of peak thing about it. And when I've spoken to like people that I work with and they're like, oh yeah, I remember from then. But it involves so much more crime than thought of. Like so deep crime.
I know two things, which are that memory of the poisoning.
Yeah.
And at some point, I think maybe when I was at university, watching part of one of the animes that they released.
Yeah. Yes.
Which I'm sure we might discuss as we go on.
We'll touch on that. We've also got promises of some Buddhism and some Christianity and some doomsday-ishness and all of that good stuff that we would expect from one of the groups that we talk about.
Lush.
I promised that this was going to be like a mega run bumper. I've got a couple of small episodes planned so we don't get sick of the sound of my voice and that they're easier
to
consume.
Sam.
Yeah.
We never would.
Oh no, my mellifluous voice.
Listeners,
write in, John's friend,
and tell Sam how you feel about her voice.
Oh, you don't have to do that, but my ego would appreciate it. So this episode is going to be a bit of history about Shoko Asahara and then a bit of a chronology of events up until the sort of 90s,
cool.
Up until the world changed when I entered it. Ah! And then we're going to have a big chunk of the crimes after that. In the next episode. So a quick bibliography. Thanks to Britannica.com, Wikipedia, The New York Times was so helpful during researching this series. A bit of info from Reddit, as well as some stuff from the US Department of Justice, JSTOR.org, Last Podcast on the Left, and then a bunch of other websites and articles. Yay.
Yay.
So we're going to start with a bit of history. And as I said, it was founded by Chizuo Matsumoto in 1987. Apologies in advance for my pronunciation of Japanese. And it was born out of his dissatisfaction with Japanese Buddhism. So he preferred the teachings of Tibetan and Theravada Buddhism, and so wanted to create a new form of Buddhism that would emphasize the non-Japanese themes. So he wanted to kind of westernize it all a little bit. And,
okay.
Chizuo Matsumoto was born in 1955 to a poor family who made tatami mats for a living. So they're like the big flooring mats.
Oh, cool.
He had infantile glaucoma, which left him partially blind in his right eye and completely blind in his left.
Oh, wow.
And he was the, I think, the sixth of seven children or something. He had a large family, but he also had a sibling who was blind and therefore was also sent along, even though he was partially sighted, sent along to this school for the blind because, like, they got more government support and free meals and stuff. And this family were like, hey, he's a bit blind. Let him go to this school.
You know what they say, in the school of the blind, the partially blind student is king.
And oh my gosh, was he the king?
Oh, really?
Absolutely. So he immediately was like, hey, I'm the king of these people because on a lunch break, I can walk them to the shop. I can see the way to the shop. Without me, they can't walk home. So I can take them to the shop, but they can buy me things to pay
for my power trip of that as a child.
Right?
Goodness.
And, you know, he was able to see things that no one else was. So he was, yeah. So he'd instantly elevated himself by something that in a mainstream school may have left him further behind.
Yeah.
That, you know, wasn't equipped to help him. And because of this sightedness, he would then use it to extort money from the other kids as well. So he was super into like saving and hoarding and having as much as he could. But he would often talk about his dream. He had these big dreams of power. He wanted to either be the Prime Minister of Japan.
Fair.
Or to rule over a kingdom of robots.
If I had to choose which of those...
Yeah.
I was thinking this is like an easy answer, but now I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
Practically.
I think you'd be quite lonely ruling over robots.
I think there'd be a certain kind of day-to-day emptiness, wouldn't there, as you as you walk around your soulless kingdom.
Around some
basically just within a big machine filled with smaller machines. That does sound quite lonely, but it feels like there's less responsibility
than if you were actually
in charge of a country.
Yeah.
So that's... Plus, I wouldn't know what to do in the event of a Godzilla attack. I don't want to have my finger on the button during a Godzilla attack and have to make that kind of decision.
Unless you were the leader of a kingdom of robots, because Godzilla attack kingdom of robots...
So unfair, isn't it? You have to choose between Prime Minister of Japan or Kingdom of Robots. You never get to have both. I, Sam, think that women like you in 2024 should be able to do both.
We should be able to do both. Equal opportunities for both Japanese premiership. And
then you can set Mecha Godzilla against Godzilla Godzilla.
Exactly. And then hopefully they just make friends and no one else gets hurt.
They just start macking out hard on the shoreline.
Okay, maybe.
Sign up to our Patreon for more Godzilla fan fiction.
He had all these grand aspirations, right? But in 1973, he was rejected from studying politics at Tokyo University. Just wasn't smart enough to do it. But he went to study acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine. Studied it for a little bit.
You mean you don't need the same kind of academic rigor for those subjects, Sam?
Apparently not. Qualify as much as he did. So because he was so into, like, you know, he extorted money all the way through school, going up to kind of university level education. So he had like a bunch of money. He was like, all right, because he was just stealing money from people, getting them to pay him to do things that only a sighted person would be able to do. He established a Chinese medicine shop just outside of Tokyo. He got married in 1974 to a lady called Tomoko, and they started having children in 1978, and they had six children together. One of his children becomes very prominent within the cult, but that's pretty much as much reference to children as I will be making in this early segment.
Okay.
Which is nice. So he's got this Chinese medicine shop. He's like quite known around as being like a bit of a cool, mysterious guy. But then in either 1981 or 1982, I found it differently in different places, he was convicted of practicing pharmacy without licenses and selling unregulated drugs.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Or fake remedies. So the whatever the Japanese equivalent of the FDA or whatever it is, we're going, well, these don't work. You can't sell them.
And that was that like a general crackdown against Chinese medicine, or was that that he particularly was like blurring the lines with what he was offering himself? Because like we could go, yeah, we could go right now. Oh no, it'd be closed today. Maybe no, maybe. Probably not.
I don't know.
We could go to the Chinese medicine shop in this city, right?
Yeah.
Which presumably is regulated differently to.
Yeah.
Or they have to make their claim. So maybe it's about how you present the claims.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the point.
Buy this incense that you definitely shouldn't eat to stop from getting achy knees, for instance. Or
just chewing a Nag Champa. That's not going to help me.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, it's a type of Indian incense, which isn't entirely relevant, but it was the only incense I could think of. Have you ever had acupuncture, Sam, while we're on this?
No.
Topic?
I quite like the idea, but I don't think I'd like it in real life.
It's just, to me, too pointy. That's my... I've never had it, and the reason I haven't had it...
Hot take.
...is because it strikes me as being too pointy for my liking.
It weirds me out when you see people with all the needles like in their face and like wiggle-waggling around. If you are an acupuncturist, please let us know why it's cool. Anyway, for these fake remedies, Asahara was charged, or Matsumoto as he was then, was charged the equivalent of £1,500. It's about $2,000-ish, okay, give or take. And at some point around here as well, he opened another acupuncture clinic. But this fine, this £1,500 fine, was enough to bankrupt his businesses. So
there goes all his bullying money.
There goes all his bullying money. Jizzed it away in some acupuncture needles.
Bullying.
Yeah. Bullying. That is a smart pun.
Thanks. I might have been away for a couple of months, but listeners, but I'm still...
We've still got the game.
Sharp as a whip. No, is that the expression?
Yeah. Sharp as a tack.
Fast as a whip.
Smart as a whip? Yeah, because a whip would smart. Ouch. Oh, that smarts. I think that's where it comes
from. For more of Sam saying phrases like that, please join our Patreon.
Could Google it. Won't. So, as a lot of people that we talk about do, when his plan A went wrong, plan B was spiritual seeking.
Hey.
So... as he was kind of recovering from this, he joined another small religious movement, which was called Agonshu. And he joined it for a really short time. But that attracted him to see what other things could be available outside of the Japanese Buddhism he'd been raised in. And also from Agonshu, he started to figure out how a small religion might be able to self-suffice with money-wise.
Okay, yeah.
He likes extorting things. So he started studying various different religious concepts. He was studying Chinese astrology and Taoism, Western esotericism,
mm-hmm,
yoga and meditation. And in the early 80s, Nostradamus had just been translated into Japanese.
Oh, okay.
So absolutely fucking love the shit out of that. And then
what's great is it can say anything you'd like it to say.
In whatever language it's in, you could translate it to mean any single thing, which is great.
Which is how Nostradamus predicted this episode of this podcast.
Yes.
You read it closely.
Yes, he did. Directly on this date. He also was looking at esoteric Buddhism and esoteric Christianity. So lots of things leading him to change his name to Shoko Asahara.
Cool.
He picked this name because Shoko, this is linking back, this is Nostradamus in action. Shoko is an offering of incense.
Ah.
We're talking about incense. And then Asahara is just like a posh name. So if I started calling myself like Frankincense Clay Harris or something, like, I don't know. That's the surname of a posh person I went to school with. That just came out. I'm really sorry. I'll cut that.
No, don't.
She'll never listen. So, oh, go on. So, offering of incense and a posh name. That's what you were trying to think
That's
of.
That's what I was... Yeah. Sage... Gilet wearer.
Lavender... Chumondly. Hey, listeners. Oh... It's a good one. He's making faces. Go on, say it.
Nagchampa Jack Wills.
Great, perfect.
In the comments, wherever you see this episode posted, please tell us your,
your
sacred incense slash... posh thing name.
Yeah, perfect. Best one wins. So in 1984, Asahara, as I will call him now, he travels to India and meets the 14th Dalai Lama, Tenzin Gyatso, where when he comes back, he says, "Oh, I achieved enlightenment straight away. I spent 5 minutes with the Dalai Lama. Now I'm enlightened."
Isn't it amazing how many of the people we talk about like get in the room with with the current Dalai Lama,
yeah,
and then go back and go, yeah, basically you told me like I'm the new one,
yeah,
so
I'm Buddha now.
Yeah.
Wow. Later on, the Dalai Lama talks about this and says that he just thought he was a bit gross,
says,
and
get fucked,
yeah,
like he did about Buddha Maitreya.
Exactly. Yeah, he was only interested in self-service, didn't care about anyone else, really not enlightened, whatever that means. So in 1987, he comes back to Japan and he founds Aum Shinrikyo after hearing a message from God.
Yes, this is my favourite bit of every cult leader's biography.
Yep. God says a few things, but mainly saying, "I have chosen you to lead God's army through Armageddon."
Oh, shit. Do we know what form this message from God took? Was it like a vision or in his head?
In his head, heard the lovely voice, was like, "Yes, that's God. He told me I'm going to lead God's army."
Listeners, don't listen to the... Apart from this voice in your head right now... Oh, fuck. Apart from this voice in your head right now, don't necessarily listen to the voices in your head when the... Oh, no.
Wait, do...
This needs to be more careful.
Yeah, don't listen to the voices in your head that advocate violence.
Yes, there we go.
Yeah. Even if it's through God.
Even if it's us.
Even if it's us. Stay non-violent, friends.
We won't. It's a pacifist tower here at Coffee and Cults.
Tower. You get some mortgage and suddenly it's a tower.
It's really not.
So God's army has to begin somewhere, right? But this is a man who is just recovering from bankruptcy. He's been spiritual seeking for a few years. He's got a few kids. Like, he needs somewhere to be. And so, in his apartment in Tokyo, he launches a yoga and meditation class called, sorry in advance, Omu Shinzen no Kai, which means, John, and this is not going to be on anyone's bingo card, Aum Immortal Mountain Wizard Association.
Oh my God, that's such a good name.
Isn't it cool? Why change it? Why make it something else? Aum Immortal Mountain Wizard Association. Like, I would go to that yoga class.
I would buy that badge to be in that club.
Yeah.
And wear it always.
Not now, but then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah, not this particular example, but an organization with that name I would, apart from this one.
Yes, yeah, not this one. I got so confused about what organisation. I thought then it was the podcast, but not Immortal Wizards. Anyway.
Join us next time for the Immortal Wizard Association podcast.
So, as again, many of our favourite cult leaders do, he starts writing books. Yay. He's written a book that's the themed along The Secrets of Developing Your Supernatural Powers.
Cool.
And our first totally chill thing is that he says that spiritual training that doesn't lead to supernatural powers is hogwash. I think that was translated, but I like that the word they chose for the translation was hogwash.
Got to get those hogs washed somehow.
Dirty old hogs. And in this book, he promises through his meditation and yoga practices that he got from being all enlightened, he promises that you will develop X-ray vision, the ability to levitate, and the ability...
Shit, listeners, Sam is levitating right now.
And the ability to read minds.
I wish I hadn't put my phone across the room. I'd be able to reach out and get a picture.
It's so far away. Oh, I landed.
Oh, she's stopped now. Oh, fuck's sake.
So at the beginning, when it was a lovely yoga and meditation class, it wasn't too criminally. It was just, is what it is, a bit weird. But somewhere between 89 and 1993, he became really obsessed with biblical prophecies and the doomsday and the rebuilding of civilization. And like during the course of leading this group, he's like gifted a Mercedes Benz by one of the members, which at that time is fancy, but they all live a very humble lifestyle. And yeah, that lovely
it's easy duality. To be humble in your Mercedes Benz.
Exactly.
Any listeners that want to buy Sam or I a Mercedes Benz, you're more than welcome.
Yeah, like I've got a little car already, and I'd probably sell it, but it'd be really appreciated. Just send me a nice letter. Don't worry about a car. Do you want a car?
I'll have a car.
Okay, that's fine. So his yoga classes grew steadily in popularity, and started attracting university students and graduates. He gained religious status in 1989. And he got this reputation for being elite. So because it had started with university students, they were kind of nerds at university, but then they went into these high-powered jobs as they graduated. Mm. And therefore it became a thing of being seen as like, oh, cool, these elite fancy people go
it
to this yoga
It was because
class,
of their yoga, therefore... not because of their hard graft at university for 3 years.
Exactly, yeah. But then as well as the nerds, let's call them nerds, as well as the nerds, they are nerds, he was getting these like super hot women who just wanted to go to a yoga class, but these women would often be in jobs that at that time were kind of designated for women, that they weren't able to get out of, sort of administrative or clerical jobs that were good but just weren't fulfilling particularly for these women. And then as the group sort of grew, gained popularity, they started attracting and kind of graduating to people working in the Metropolitan Police, the Japanese Self-Defense Forces, bureaucrats, as well as lawyers, scientists, all sorts of, you know, high-profile, high-powered people.
Wow.
Would be going to these meditation classes.
Wow. Interesting.
Right?
Again, that kind of interesting pattern that you get with, like, Nexium and... other things. Yeah. I'm wondering what the overlap here is with Happy Science. It hasn't occurred to me that those are some of the time operating at the same time and in the same kind of field, right?
Yeah, I'll look that up. I'll have that answer for you next week.
Great, thank you.
So these people are joining to follow this man that they have been told, and they are reading that he is the first enlightened one since Buddha. However, he also starts calling himself the Holy Pope, the saviour of the country, and, maybe this is on your bingo card, Christ.
We knew it was coming, listeners, we knew it. If you had that on your bingo card,
yeah,
give that a big fat tick.
A lot of other people were also attracted by a photograph, and I've got it here, but because we're having various technical obstacles, I'll get John
to
move around.
Okay, I'm coming.
There we go.
Two things.
Okay.
First, yeah. That is a fucking amazing... That might be one of my favourite photographs.
Yeah, it's really
of
good.
All time.
Yeah.
Two, I have seen that before,
yeah.
But not associated it with Om Shinrikyo.
Oh, this exact photograph, yeah. Or this trick? Oh.
I think this exact photograph.
Yeah, there he is.
So I've seen it maybe in a book of weird phenomena or something at some point and not connected it with, with this particular group.
Like really clearly having just jumped in a lotus position.
Yeah, do you want to describe the photograph, Sam?
Yeah, so he is in a lotus position, so that's with the back of the right foot on top of the thigh of the left foot and the back of the left foot on top of the right leg.
He's sitting cross-legged.
Cross-legged.
In a teeny tiny loincloth.
Little tiny pair of shorts. He's got his nips out. His hair is like, well, he is falling back down. And that's the direction his hair is moving in. And he's about, what do you say, 6 inches off the ground?
Like Einstein on a windy day. Yeah. Yeah. He's maybe a foot off the off the ground.
Yeah. With an expression on his face that looks a bit like he's having trouble pooping today.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. Intense defecation.
Oh, maybe it's just a mega fart. Yeah, propelled him off the earth. He would also attract attention by wearing like really pretty coloured pink robes, which separated him from kind of traditional religious wear for men, and would separate him from other religious leaders. But they've started to attract police attention at this time and sort of anti-cult attention, where they start being accused of holding people against their will, forcing donations from members, deceiving their recruits with these promises of these superpowers. And they're also suspected of murdering a member who tried to leave.
Oh shit, it just got real. Okay.
Right? So this yoga class can't run in his apartment forever. They've got a little like village hall or whatever in between times, but they need somewhere that they can all be. Listeners, tick building a compound off your bingo card.
Oh, no, but nobody needs a car. If you need a compound, you're in trouble.
They start building this near to Mount Fuji, so you could see Mount Fuji from nearby.
Oh, nice.
Lovely, picturesque.
Oh, I'm coming round on this compound.
You'll go off it now. It was like a sort of ragtag collection of mobile buildings and shacks and like completely bug-ridden, disgusting things. Yeah. His room was kept fairly clean, as much as it could be exposed to elements like that. But at the beginning, they had enough money to buy the land and sort of, and just build some kind of fairly ramshackle houses on it. Later on in 1988, an anti-cult lawyer called Tsutsumi Sakamoto launched an anti-ALM public relations campaign. He was seeking to compare it to the Unification Church, who he'd already successfully sued. And you're going to do the Moonies some point?
Yeah, some point this year, the Moonies are coming.
That's been on your list as long as this has been on mine, I think. So he'd already sued them for deceiving its members into transferring their assets to the group. So he sees the same thing happening in ALM, starts the proceedings against them for that, for holding members against their will, for threats, manipulations, draining money out of the households of members, which he called spiritual sales. So where a donation of $700 would get you blah, 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 and that thing would cure all your problems. And then he also created a victims association to support ex-members, family members of the people that were involved in this. And that still operated until about 2006. So the long-lasting effects of this group. In 1989, Tsutsumi recorded a TV interview. And that interview, without his consent, was shown to ALM Shinrikyo. He wasn't warned. They just said, we filmed this thing. This is about you. Showed it to ALM Shinrikyo.
Oh, for like right of reply kind of.
Yeah. Okay. But they hadn't anonymized him in any way. They hadn't, you know, he was suing them. They'd not protected him in any way. And ALM Shinrikyo returned and convinced the TV network not to broadcast the interview. Sakamoto and his wife and child went missing from their home the following month. There is more on that to come later on. Ooh. Oof. So that's a little bit of kind of preamble. We're going to go into their beliefs.
Mid-amble.
Mid-amble. So why would you join? How would you join? Their big initial pitch to both students and kind of the general public, the yoga interested, was the ALM Salvation Plan, which claimed to cure physical illnesses with health improvement techniques, realise life goals by improving intelligence and positive thinking, and concentrating on what's important at the expense of leisure. It sounds a bit like the Kadampa.
Yeah, very right? Similar.
They were also advertising in publishing comics and, as you said, animes. One of the anime clips I watched was him in that lotus position flying over
just fucking flying around the city. I fucking love it.
Flying around. Yeah, absolutely beautiful. And then this was to appeal to the other nerds that they hadn't got through university. Sorry, I'm sure you're all lovely, but also nerds. These cartoons and comics would also include biblical prophecies, but under the guise of space missions. Bit Star Warsy, I guess.
Mm.
And then other conspiracy theory sort of documents about the quest for truth and how that's only achievable through the Elm Salvation Plan.
Obviously.
The recruiters for the group would talk to people about their current spiritual experiences, and then whatever they said, whatever spiritual connection they have, would be like, ah, that means you've been called for Elm Shinrikyo. That means you should come and join us. Because you'd already been called in a previous life. And these people were kind of all ages, different areas of society, sent out to kind of get more people involved in it by saying, you're already involved, so you might as well just come along. Oh, and can we have your house? Thank you. Easy peasy. The OGs, the original yoga members, meditation members, were then trained as teachers of this yoga, and then they would move out, teach more yoga and meditation, blah blah blah. Again, like Kadampa, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They would use Theravada teachings and then smash together with biblical prophecy, but their main point of worship was Shiva the Destroyer. Pretty cool. Looking.
Oh, I should have brought my little Shiva from upstairs down.
It's okay, because I think this isn't really about Shiva.
Yeah, sorry, he's just getting a shout out, really.
Yeah, lovely. But Shiva combined with the biblical end of days, four horsemen of the apocalypse, wow, etc. Okay. Shiva's the one with many arms, right?
Hmm.
I wonder if she would ride one horse or many.
I'm sort of imagining her like a south, southern states trick, riding on a horse's back but on one foot while balancing. That's what I'm imagining.
With swords.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he thought that the biblical end of days was going to be somewhere between 1999 and 2003. Luckily, that was more than 20 years ago. We're fine. He was wrong. What a shocker.
Probably.
So because he was the first enlightened man since Buddha, he claimed that there should be a Buddha in every country in the world. So he would then be able to enlighten more people, create Buddhas from his group, but he should be the main Buddha.
Top Buddha.
Top number one Buddha. Other practices included yoga, which wasn't kind of the traditional yoga. I've talked about it before. I've been boring about it before, but not real yoga, just uncomfortable poses. I held for too long so that people got hurt, they got shouted at, etc. He would emphasize control over natural impulses and the body. So, no sex. But typically, of these people, unless you're a young woman and it's with him. Another super gross thing is that another kind of practice that they had was the drinking of sweet water.
Oh, no, that's not what I think it is it?
No. Maybe worse. This is bath water.
Oh, Saltburn style.
Oh, I haven't seen it, should I?
Please welcome to this brief intermission of cinema review. It's fine.
Okay, cool.
Like, it's kind of fun.
Yeah?
It's not nearly as, like, clever or shocking as it wants to be. It looks cool. It's really well shot.
Nice.
And there's some, you know, there's some enjoyable stuff about it. Not the drinking somebody's spunky bath water.
Oh, no.
Or the other weird shit that happens.
Okay.
But it's, yeah, it's just a bit, yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah, and it's a bit like cliche. It's a bit like the story of it is quite familiar.
Okay.
I think you'll spot where it's going.
Right,
earlier
sooner.
Than a lot of people might.
Okay.
But it's fun, but it's not as, you know, some people were like, oh, it's amazing. It's not amazing.
Okay. Thank you for joining us for our short film review intermission.
I rate it 3 spunks in the bathwater out of 5.
I think a lot. 1 spunk in the bathwater is enough, isn't it?
I don't know. I'm feeling dehydrated just saying it.
So you could.
I'm so. I was saying this to Sam earlier. I apologize to any students of mine who were told to listen to this podcast by another lecturer at the university for their podcast module.
Hi, second years.
And have to listen to that. Oh. I'm so sorry.
They know you so well now, John. So his sweet water was considered filled with high dimensional energy. Oh. There are a few different levels of initiation that you can do while you're a member of the group as well. And each one that you do, you become more and more devoted to Shokra Sahara. By around the 90s, there were 50,000 members.
Holy shit, I never knew it was that big.
Most of them lived in Russia, but a lot of them were in Japan, and there were around 20 in the USA.
Wow, I'm surprised in Russia.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. The group we're going to continue to talk about is mainly the Japanese contingent of this group, as they did lots of big crimes. I don't know if the Russian lot did a bunch of crimes too. If it was this widespread, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
But who knows?
Sounds like it's a feature, not a bug.
Yeah. Initiation number 1 was the blood initiation.
Oh, I don't like it already.
It gets worse. $7,000. That's bad.
I like, just have my blood. Yeah.
No, you don't give your blood. You drink 3 spoonfuls of what is supposedly Asahara's blood.
Teaspoon or tablespoon?
I don't know, but you drink it from a wine glass, so teaspoons wouldn't fill a lot of a wine glass, would it? And this would then supposedly imbue you with magical properties. And if you didn't feel them, you might have to...
Or hepatitis.
Yeah. But if you didn't feel them, you might have to do it again. Because if you didn't... Hopefully they were using animal blood. Because, like, that could be a black pudding, right?
Yeah.
Like, but either way, it makes my mouth go watery and not because it's delicious, because I might vomit. There was another one that's also going to make us go all... the holy hair initiation.
I see a pattern emerging here.
Which is drinking some tea, but the tea is made with Asahara's hair.
That is gross, but somehow not quite as gross as the blood so far.
Yeah.
Are these in order? Are these in, like, level of devotion?
Oh, no. I think it... Oh, I don't know. My answer to that question is I don't know.
Okay.
But true enlightenment with Aum Shinrikyo was only available through a one-on-one with Shokra Asahara, which would cost you around $8,000. And allegedly, he would just give you a cup of tea and you would sit and have a chat. But it wasn't tea, John, was it? It wasn't tea. It was LSD.
Amazing.
So, and Hamilton Byrne style.
I'm back in.
Yep, giving you LSD so that you then go all bonkers. You see this guy, you think this guy must be Buddha. He's the guy. There was also... Wait, I'm going to get the picture up here so you can properly admire it.
Okay.
You could wear a PSI, which is a perfect salvation initiation device. Which, so what you can see in front of you there, and I'll pop this picture up on our Instagram, is a sort of helmet with electrodes on it. So like in the electric chair, you put little sponges to conduct the electric on your head, and then you put your lovely helmet on and make sure all your wires are plugged into each other. And these electrodes supposedly would transmit Asahara's brainwave data.
Into your brain?
Into your brain through regular, quite light little tiny shocks.
Wow. Nobody tell Elon Musk about this.
No. He'll implant it into his own face.
That is terrifying.
Yeah, right?
Like, so, as an idea, looking at the photo you just showed me is, like, obviously just a skull cap with some wires taped onto it.
Yeah, it looks a bit like a motion capture helmet.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that could be little ping pong balls instead of wires and it would have the same look. But yeah, so you could buy one of those if you want to, John. How much do you think you would need to spend to buy one of those that would transmit his brain waves?
Oh, it's got to be a lot, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I reckon $100,000.
Oh, this is going to be disappointing. A little bit less than that.
Oh, $20,000.
$70,000.
Still too much.
Still too much. If you couldn't quite afford to buy one, you could rent one, which would be $7,000.
That's how I like my enlightenment rented.
Per month. Yeah.
It's like fucking everything. You can't buy, like all software, you can't buy it now. You just have to rent it. That's what enlightenment has become, a monthly charge.
Yeah. Entitlement is the Adobe suite.
It's the Adobe suite of enlightenment. Spiritual parts.
So this lovely, glamorous Adobe Suite helmet would induce a blissful meditative state. It would erase your previous thought patterns and replace them with Asahara's patterns. What a shitty thing to do.
I mean, that's literal brainwashing right there.
Well, yeah, like...
if it actually worked.
There are even sponges. Make sure the brain is proper shiny and clean. And they also had, there was another process that they had in their initiation, which was the Kundalini process. Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about Kundalini before with another group.
Quite a few groups.
Quite a few of them. His version is that you have to show that you could lower your heart rate, your brain activity, and your oxygen levels while you were tripping bollocks on LSD. So you'd have to take the medicine and then sit still. I've never had LSD. I don't know how easy this would be to do. But then lower your heart rate and your brain weight. You would have to meditate while on hallucinogenic drugs.
Wow.
Climbing up through these levels of entitlement.
It's a bad time to tell you I put LSD in the gin just then.
Oh.
I didn't.
Is that why the episode is going on longer than we thought it would?
We've actually been here recording for 5 days.
We've been here all... This is where we've been the last 2 months, just trying to get through this episode.
Just doing this episode.
So climbing up the levels of enlightenment to priesthood status would require you to give up every single material possession. So as far as I know, like becoming a monk is in Buddhism, right?
Yeah.
So some sort of genuine Buddhist-ish things... but also you would only get around 3 hours of sleep a night. The smarter people with the better jobs outside would be moved up more quickly, somehow conveniently, because if they had better jobs, they would have more money to donate, and having to give up more would mean they have more to give up, and therefore takes advantage of everybody in that process. Because he would say, like, all that money that you're earning in that job is giving you bad karma. So you should put it back into the church, and then we will be able to use it for good. But this meant that his inner circle of priests was very clever people, scientists and doctors and lawyers. High powered, really smart, Nexium style, super smart people. They would run businesses. They had electronics businesses, restaurants, factories, Chinese medicine hospitals, where they would extort people for huge medical bills of diseases that they told them that they had and therefore fixed, and therefore charged them a lot of money. But they also had legal offices and then jobs outside of cult-run businesses like the police or the military.
Wow.
The fact that they own and run hospitals is wild.
Terrifying.
Because it gives them so much scope to commit the crimes that they commit later on as well. His followers would also be told to write articles about Asahara, about how amazing he was, and that they were really privileged to be in his presence. Mm-hmm. All gross. A minimum amount he would charge for you to join would be $700, but that would be for like a super basic membership. Like, hey, you can come to yoga on a Tuesday, but you can't stay for... a cup of tea and a cake.
you can't have any LSD.
Yeah, no
that
LSD
shit's expensive.
Yeah, like $7,000. He would charge more money, obviously, for private classes with him or with another teacher. So any of his priests or his teachers, you could then also pay a large sum to have one-on-one lessons from them. The bath water costs about $800.
Whoa.
He would charge $2,000 for week-long meditation seminars where you would get one meal a day, which was boiled vegetables, and you would sleep on dirt floors in the meditation cells.
Mm. Nothing helps me meditate more than a cell. Comfy.
I'm showing John now a lovely meditative cell with a picture of Shoko Asahara. Not quite long enough to lay down
properly.
Which is the
biggest and most significant thing in the room.
Apart from maybe the shitter.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Yeah. So we've got all the classic things, especially during these meditation seminars. Isolating from family and friends, controlling food and rest, no drugs, no alcohol, except for the LSD that was given to you. They would be given alm food outside of, like, it, just if you lived in the compound, your two meals a day were alm food, which was a boiled veg stew or just rice or just some seaweed or just some tofu. The maximum amount of sleep you get is like 5 hours, and that would be on a really good night.
God.
The group had some punishments if you were seen to be doing stuff against the group. So they would have something called drop karma, which would be getting rid of your bad karma by a forced karmic removal. John, what do you think a forced karmic removal might be?
I don't know, but it sounds painful.
Yeah, you get the shit kicked out of you.
Oh, no.
They just, everyone gets beaten. And if you don't join in the beatings, you're accruing bad karma for not rescuing that person from their bad karma.
Holy fuck. That is bad.
Yeah.
Red flag, man. Red flag.
We're in a red flag shop now. You need any flags? Go to this red flag shop. Another punishment would be to be hung upside down for extended periods of time. Because then your brain goes all funny, right? All the blood goes to your head and you go all imagine the pins and needles. Eesh. They would also perform shock therapy. No. They already had their lovely hats. They could just zip, pop the voltage up a little bit. In the meditation cells that I showed you earlier, you might be sent to listen to meditation recordings in the dark for days and days and days. And one ex-member talked about being kept in one of those cells for a month.
Fuck yeah.
With that recording of him 24 hours a day.
God.
Like how that person didn't completely lose their mind.
Yeah.
No idea.
And that is torture, right? That is...
Yeah. But he would be told that he was accruing good karma. Yeah. All this stuff he was absorbing was creating good karma for him. Something else they would do is they might dunk your head in ice water. So remember, like, one of my first sentences was that they were accused of murdering someone. This guy, Teruyuji Majima, was drowned by them holding his head down in this water for too long. And this is that first thing that got the attention to them. The inner circle agreed that it would bring negative attention to the group. So they disposed of his body via cremation and spread his ashes over a lake, like ASAP. Remember, they had this hospital that they could use to dispose of stuff.
Of
they
course,
had these scientists.
The front for all of this stuff.
Exactly.
Crazy.
And then when a close friend of Majima's was upset, they went out and murdered him as well. They strangled him and burnt his body. It was justified through the concept of poa, where the person had built up so much bad karma by criticizing the group that the only way would be to transform them, which would be to clear their bad karma in this life by clearing their life so that then they're free to accrue good karma in their next life. In their
dangerous shit.
And he would send multiple members of the group to do this because then they would make sure everyone else was involved. They would keep each other culpable for it. But then also, because they were so weak from being ill-fed and ill-rested, they wouldn't be like, they weren't strong enough to beat a person to death. They needed a few of them.
Fuck.
Because when one of them got tired, the next one could start up. So from this, from having cleansed the group of, cleansed in big quotes, of people that they felt were critical, now they've got established how they can punish people. They've also started performing a lot of violence. He had enough of a blueprint to start militarizing the group. And so that's where we're going to pick up next time.
Oh,
oh, Tune back in next time, listeners, for chemical weapons and many, many, many more murders.
Wow, Inomption Rikyo Part 2 next time. Sam!
Right.
Thank you.
That's okay, you're welcome.
Very well done. Fascinating.
Yeah? Like, I learned so many things. Yeah.
It always just amazes me, like, the escalation as well, right? Like,
how do you go from
running a yoga class
to
having to dispose of a body? Like, it's a slippery slope, yoga teachers of the world.
bad yoga teachers of the world, sure. But I think, I don't know, there's got to be some connection with, like, when he was a kid, he loved extorting people. He loved having control over people. He became mysterious. When you teach a yoga class, you say one word and people do a series of beautiful movements.
Oh, yeah, it's all about the power, isn't it?
The puppeteering and the control and the, bleh.
Wow.
There are so many things I also want to tell you about as well, but I've got to save some of the good, like, fun, shocking stuff for next time.
Well, if you want to join us for fun, shocking stuff, be right here for our next release coming to you very, very soon, listeners.
Yeah.
And we look forward to seeing you then. In the meantime, if you'd like to talk to us, you can do that by pinging us an email at coffeeandcults@gmail.com. Or you can hit us up on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook at Coffee and Cults. If you'd like to support us, you can do that at Patreon, patreon.com/coffeeandcults. Or buy us a one-off coffee at ko-fi.com/coffeeandcults. Those are all of the things that you can do. Or just, you know, share this podcast with a friend.
Or a university class that you teach.
So weird.
That's so odd.
It's so weird.
But lovely.
Thank you for bumping up our... I mean, if you're listening to it now after your module is finished, fucking fair play. Thank you.
Yeah,
you...
cheers, bye.
I don't have favourites, obviously, because that would be unprofessional. But
if
you're still listening,
yeah,
you're our favourites.
Yeah.
And if you're otherwise just one of our regular listeners or Patreon supporters, never forget that.
We love you.
We're going to talk to you.
You are the initiate. You are the cosmic being.
We found out that I was actually getting a 2-inch by 2-inch